You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with
sociologist and author Richard Sennett.
This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
Oftentimes we look at creative work as though the very creative process itself is something good. And we've got to break that habit. These are tools of expression. And like any tool, you can use it to damage something or to make something. And so I've been very mindful of, even in the art I know best, which is classical music, which seems harmless, if nothing else, that it can be turned to very malign purposes, for instance, in the operas of Wagner. So I wanted to do this set of books, and I interrupted you because who knows whether I'll live long enough to do them, to show what is kind of the basic DNA that people use, for good or for ill. What are the tools they use, if you like, of expression that they use in the creative process?
You concentrate, well, on so many things, but really on this as a stage, the cities as a stage for performance, as a living, like, work of art, and really broaden our conception of what is a performance. Like, we think about politics as being a performance, but also public protest as being a kind of choreography.
Well, this is not an original idea to me. That for a long time, ever since the Renaissance, in fact, people have thought about cities, the design of cities, as works of art. That's mostly about their imagery, their physical spaces, and so on. The notion that there's spaces where people are performing for each other in everyday life, this more recent one, comes out of Baudelaire in the 19th century, a little out of Balzac. And it asks a question, which I try and take up in my book, which is, well, sure, people are on display to each other all the time and they're, performing roles. What's special about performance once you go into a theater, into a music hall? And that's not just a question about where you are. It's about what's happening. If you saw somebody doing a battu on the street, a ballet dancer, you might think, great, but you'd also think, this is sort of weird. But the moment you see somebody making those steps inside a theater, it becomes a whole different kind of experience, expressive experience. But the moment you get into a concert hall, even somebody coughing in a classical concert can disturb you. There is no art without craft. And there's kind of direct line in my brain between the book that I wrote on craftsmanship and the book on performance. The difference is that a lot of craftsmanship is self-referential. So one of the issues about craft, just to come back to that, that we have the performing arts, is where the limits on getting things absolutely right have to end, because digitally we can lie, whereas a crafted performing live is something in which the imperfections are built in. They're part of the expression, Even something like memory slips, which in my old age I'm now subject to. When you have a memory slip in a live performance, you've got to cover it over. And sometimes you do something quite interesting to cover over the fact you've forgotten what the score is. And that's something that, say, a woodworker wouldn't want to do. They would want something where it's absolutely what it is. There's no artifice that's put over it. Things aren't just good enough, they're right, which is a kind of aspect of craftsmanship that gets in our way as performers. Anyhow, the other side of my book is, which you mentioned briefly, is I'm really interested in the relation between performance and ritual. Where do those two separate? Because a prayer is a kind of performance, but we'd never call it artistic. It's collective, it's impersonal, pretty much. The same thing with singing a psalm or something like that. The idea of standing out personally is not something that's involved in ritual, whereas the marking the artist's presence is something that happens in the non-ritualized domain of performance. In this book, I try and talk about this in a scene, I don't know if you remember it, in the AIDS hospital, where the priests want to give absolution to people who are dying of AIDS. But this group of people were professional performers, and they wanted to perform instead. They didn't want absolution. They didn't want a ritual. They wanted something which was more alive, which was about them, which was they put on a performance of As You Like It in this hospital ward, which was I describe in the book. So that's an instance of this other big thing I'm interested in, which is where does a mark of the creator come in non-ritualized kinds of performance? Of course, there are all kinds of rituals on stage. For instance, you know, dressing up in those funny suits that we wear is it marks a sort of difference that you're not seeing somebody who you just meet on the street. That this is a special realm. That is it's true, it's a ritual, but it's to mark the presence that art is doing something special.
And I was also wondering, then you talk about religion, and I mean, I'm not particularly religious, but there is something that we lose by losing our connection with history and tradition, and where we all knew the same songs, or we all could be familiar with the canon of literature or of works of art.
The problem is whether they are good or bad. You know, if you went to a Trump rally, that's a ritualized experience. And boy, is it theatrical. All of that acting out, and it's very cleverly acted out, is a way of arousing anger and indeed hatred with people about subjects which aren't named. In Britain, we use the term dog whistle. And every Trump performance is a dog whistle about race.
He's really the entertainer president of our nightmares. And I just want to mention on that thing, we do have these collective experiences like that. I was sad and kind of heartened during COVID that people were happy that we all were living through an experience that they don't remember the last time.
Well, I don't believe in any of that. That is, I think that to deal with climate crisis, we need to deal with climate change.
We can't dance our way out of this.
It just seems to me it's a kind of, it's a dodge. You know, it's just not, it is dancing your way out of water shortages. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I've read and followed your work, and I've just literally finished reading your fascinating work on performing. At one point, you raise the issue that power itself starts to become staged at a certain point. And therefore, one of your childhood dreams, if you like, if I may refer to 1963, a year to which you keep returning.
I can't remember.
That year seems to have a particular weight for you in Manhattan or in New York. And you bring back what for me is fascinating is the idea that something happened there in 63 where you saw high art and everydayness meeting. And then when I read through the rest of the essays, particularly your account of AIDS in New York, and what you underline is a Catholic hospital, which allows kind of liberties that are almost unthinkable in other kind of similar institutions in the city, you again come back to a problem of the relationship between individual liberty and social constraint. And then in the third part, you come to the idea, it seems to me, of personal restraint and social restraint. In other words, that the accumulation of what has been happening in terms of rhetoric, and I think it is rhetorical activity from the time of what you describe as the Riefenstahl film, that we have come to a point where we can look at a Hitler-like figure and imagine it as some kind of failed entertainment.
That's a very good way to put it.
Is that...
Well, you raise a lot of issues. First, I would say about 1963, it's engraved in my mind because it was a moment in the performing arts in New York. I think it is something that has a moral consequence for the performer, which is how to be a more, how to use this power of performance more modestly, how not to become a Trump or a Trump-like figure, but to see one's ability to move out others as something that has to be a point of personal reflection, since you can obviously do so much harm. And maybe that's politics.
Politics, indeed, is a zone apart where anything goes that the powerful decide can go.
Do you remember when Musk appeared in the White House with the chainsaw?
The image.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah. And the double salutes as well.
The chainsaw was really interesting because if you watch it closely, Trump's looking at him like, oh my God, this is another way to do this. This is a prop. This is creating what we're seeing today is more like a kind of Guatemalan dictatorship. You harm the judiciary, doesn't know what to do. You disorient the legislators who don't know how to behave and so on. You have a lot of chaos, and behind that chaos in public leaves you free to pursue what I think is just, you know, the creation of more wealth and more power in private. When you look at those Leni Riefenstahl films, for instance, Triumph of the Will or the one about the Olympics, they're about real events which she accurately films. There's nothing mystifying about them, you know. These are things that actually happened just the way they're shown on film. Whereas at these Trump rallies, you know, they're pervaded by alternative facts. The films they show could be Disney films for this kind of political versions of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I mean, I think we'd have a more humane politics if we were willing to be bored more. But in the end, I think the notion of nostalgia for young people, that it was, you know, my time or Patrick's time was better than now, isn't going to serve them very well.
Well, these are such important insights, and thank you, Richard Sennett, for opening our minds to the performance that lies beneath art, life, politics. By recognizing the life in the concrete, we can transform our relationships, and our cities can become creative, inspiring, living works of art. We all live on one planet we call home. Thank you for adding your voice to One Planet Podcast and the creative process.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.